Hello and welcome to The On-Call Room,
a Grey's Anatomy podcast.
I'm Abby.
I'm Bree, and it's a, beautiful day to podcast. We are separate from each other, so that probably sounded a little messy, but welcome everyone to The On-Call Room. Today, we're going to be talking about season 15, episode 19, Silent All These Years. And so we wanted to give a trigger warning at the top of this episode. We're going to be discussing the topic of rape and sexual assault. So you know yourself best. If you need to take care of yourself and skip this episode this week, please do that. We will be here again next week. We're only going to be discussing this one episode. So you can just hit next. Move on to your next podcast.
Yes. And because of that too, we aren't going to be having our normal post-op that we usually have. That will resume next week. And just if you're like someone that likes to plan ahead, next week we'll be talking about episodes 20, 21, and 22. And if this is your first time listening, typically in episodes, we tackle 2 to 3 per episode. We've gone through all of season 15 through, of course, at this point, 19. And so if this is your first time listening, we also recommend that you go back and watch all of Grey's first, because we're a spoilers podcast and we don't want to ruin storylines for you. So that being said, we just felt that this one had a little bit of gravity to it. And we, again, just wanted to provide that warning that if this is something you didn't want to hear about, you have the opportunity to skip and not really miss out on any of the other Grey's Anatomy content that we have.
Absolutely. Also, I just want to gently apologize to everyone. I feel like I have morning voice right now. It is like...
It's morning.
I haven't done like... I almost felt like I should have done vocal warm-ups because like me, because I literally sound like I got hit by a truck and I don't know why. I went to bed early. No, I went to bed early, like had a good night's rest. I just haven't... Like this is the first time I'm speaking this morning. So this is... A lesson for myself that I should probably, if we record in the morning, I don't know, talk to my cat for a while or something.
Unique New York, New York unique.
Yeah, that's a good one. Oh, that felt like, oh, Elphaba.
That's also like the sigh that my dog makes. Like, he'll like putter around the house and then he'll finally find where he's going to lay down. And you just hear like, like his life is so hard.
Yeah, that was a very McCoy noise. This is going to be a tough episode. I'm like, I think it's really important and we'll get into it. But I also just think it's really hard to talk about. So we're just going to do the best we can. I know this episode is really important to a lot of people. It is a very important episode of Grey's Anatomy. So, but just, you know, give us grace in discussing it. We tried to do the episode justice, but it's tough. So,
and for a little like real world, I just think it's important to know this aired March 28th, 2019. This was right like post the Brett Kavanaugh trial.
Okay.
If you're like need to time travel and remember what time of life that was, that's when this was, when this, and it was directed by Debbie Allen and it was written by Elizabeth Finch, which is confusing. Yeah, because, but we're going to just, you know, we're going to talk about it as if like when we first watched it and we know nothing about Elizabeth Finch, because that's just too many layers.
Yeah, we can't get into that. Do you want to read the monologue?
Sure, I will. So the monologue is read by Meredith Grey and it says, "When there's a poisonous snake in our path, we freeze. When we smell smoke, we run. When faced with danger, fear takes over and we react, desperate to feel safe. It's biological, primal. But for someone who suffers from trauma, it's the everyday things. A song in a coffee shop, the smell of rubbing alcohol, seemingly random, common things convincing your brain and body you're in danger. And there is no way out. Too often, trauma gets dismissed as just in our head. But the pain is real. We feel it in our muscles, our cells, our hearts, our heads. And while there is no magic fix, no pill to make it disappear, we can ask for help and we can tell our truth whenever we're ready." Meredith Grey.
And then for shotgun workup, we have one patient, Abby Redding. She has diaphragmatic rupture. I did a really nice job reading that.
You sure did. I'll read the first round and then you can read the second.
Sounds good.
Okay. Jo travels to Pittsburgh and meets her mother, Vicky. When she arrives, she finds her mom in a beautiful house with a husband and two kids. She tells Vicky who she is and asks her to meet her at a diner down the road. At first, Vicky doesn't want to come and doesn't have a lot to say to Jo. She tells her the family medical history background and tries to leave. Jo accuses her of not doing what was in the best interest of her baby and tells her that she did not have a better life. Jo tells her about her time in foster care and her abusive husband. We find out that Jo's mother was raped by a TA at her college, and Jo was the outcome of that rape. We find out that her mom hid the entire pregnancy from everyone she knew, and that the only way she knew how to move forward was to drop Jo off at the fire station. At the end of the conversation, Jo reaches for her birth mother's hand, and Vicky pulls away. While back at the hospital, Jo has yet to confide in Alex and mostly just wants to be alone. The rest is from the next episode.
So. Right. Okay, so at the hospital, a woman named Abby comes in with a face laceration. She claims that she hit her head on some cupboards, but it's clear right away to Jo that the woman has been sexually assaulted. With a team of female doctors, including Kadri, Teddy, and Jo, they calmly and with an immense care take care of Abby and help her make the decision to do a rape kit should she decide to press charges later down the road. It is clear throughout the process that Abby has been through an incredible trauma, and Jo is with her every step of the way, telling her that it was not her fault. When it's time for Abby to go to surgery, she is afraid to see any man's face. And so the doctors line the hallway with nurses, front desk staff, doctors, and anyone in the hospital who is female. They are able to safely bring Abby to surgery where she can get the care that she needs.
And then we're going to bump to our notes and trivia, because some of them I feel like are important just going into the context of this. So first of all, this episode's title originated from the song Silent All These Years, originally sung by Tori Amos. The reason writer Elizabeth Finch chose this title is because in college, a friend of hers was raped and she did not know how to help. However, days prior, she had gone to a Tori Amos concert where people were handing out RAINN bumper stickers, which made her tell her friend about this RAINN, which we'll talk about in a second, where they were able to help her friend.
The episode scored 7.37 million viewers, a season high.
A label shown during the sexual assault evidence kit shows that the hospital part of the episode takes place on March 28, 2019.
Showrunner Krista Vernoff has declared that this is one of the most powerful episodes of the entire series. The episode focuses on consent and was directly inspired by Christine Blasey Ford's testimony before the Senate Judiciary Committee regarding Supreme Court nominee Brett Kavanaugh. That felt like a lot of tough words.
You did really well. It was like powering through for you as you did that. Writer Elizabeth R. Finch makes a cameo as one of the nurses transporting Abby to the OR. The other women in the hall are all women who work at Shondaland or ABC who requested to be in the scene after they had read the script and word had spread.
Kalila Joy refused to see the wall of women seen in rehearsals so that her reaction would be completely genuine on camera. She auditioned multiple times in the span of 1 year for different roles on the show, but Krista Vernoff deemed her too good for the small role she initially auditioned for. Kalila was then offered the role of Abby once the script was ready without her having to audition.
Camilla Luddington shared that they shot the scenes in chronological order, which rarely happens. Boom.
Boom, boom, boom. Okay, so before we get into the episode, Abby and I both thought it was really important that we provided some statistics. And so all of these statistics are from the RAINN. That's the Rape, Abuse, and Incest National Network. So we're just going to read them. If I really do encourage you to not skip this part and listen, because it's really important information. So, every 68 seconds, so a little over a minute, an American is sexually assaulted. On average, there are 463,634 victims age 12 or older of rape and sexual assault each year in the United States. And out of every 1,000 rapes, only 310 are reported to the police. Demographics for ages 12 to 34 are the highest risk years for rape and sexual assault. And we're going to get into the different demographics. I don't know. Do you want to jump in, Ab?
Yeah. One out of every six American women has been the victim of attempted or completed rape. And 90% of adult rape victims are women. And in the women demographic category, females aged 16 to 19 are 4 times more likely than the general population to be victims of rape, attempted rape, or sexual assault. Women ages 18 to 24 who are college students are 3 times more likely than women in general to experience sexual violence. And female of the same age who are not enrolled in college are 4 times as likely. And then for men, as of 1998, 2.78 million men in the U.S. had been victims of attempted or completed rape. About 3% of American men, or 1 in 33, have experienced an attempted or completed rape in their lifetime. And 1 out of every 10 rape victims are male.
Transgender, genderqueer, nonconforming, 21% of that community, college students have been sexually assaulted, compared to 18% of non-TGQN females and 4% of non-TGQN males. Native Americans, this is really important. Native Americans are at the greatest risk of sexual violence. On average, American Indians ages 12 and older experience 5,900 sexual assaults per year. American Indians are twice as likely to experience a rape sexual assault compared to all races. And 41% of sexual assaults against American Indians are committed by a stranger, 34% by an acquaintance, and 25% by an intimate or family member.
And then people who are incarcerated, an estimated 80,600 inmates each year experience sexual violence while in prison or jail. 60% of all sexual violence against inmates is perpetrated by jail or prison staff, and more than 50% of the sexual contact between inmate and staff member, all of which is illegal, is non-consensual.
And then in the military, 6,053 military members reported experiencing sexual assault during military service in FY 2018? I don't know. DOD estimates about 20,500 service members experienced sexual assault that year. The DOD estimates 6.2% of active duty women and 0.7% of active duty men experienced sexual assault in 2018. So those are some stats. If you want more information on that, you can go to, I don't know if it's RAIN or R-A-I-N.
Should we call it RAIN?
Let's call it RAIN. It's easier. You can go to their website. They also have information, statistics on like perpetrators. I thought it was really important. I didn't put it in here, but like 50%, I think, of people who perpetrate rape and sexual assault are white. I think that's like a really important piece of information to have. White people are the highest. And so anyway, there's a lot of information on there. Check it out. We thought it was important you hear those things.
And we just wanted to start too with the phone number for this national network that you can call if you need help, is 1-800-656-HOPE, which is 4673. So again, 1-800-656-4673.
And if you don't want to call, they also have a live chat on their website. So perfect. Now we will get into the episode.
Okay. Do you remember watching this live?
I do. Yeah. And I remember it kind of being a big deal. Like, I feel like there was, like, in the media or them, you know, showing on ABC or something, like leading up to it, it was like, everyone has to watch this episode.
Yeah. I can't remember if I knew leading up or even like immediately after learning that the people lining the hallways were staff of Shondaland and ABC, which I think is such a really like cool idea. And also the fact that in reading those notes and trivia that those people like found out about that and then asked to be a part of it. Like, it wasn't like they were told, hey, we need people to come line the halls. It was very like they chose to be a part of it after hearing about the script.
Yeah. Yeah. I think this topic like touches so many people. I think it really puts into perspective hearing those stats. Like, either maybe you have experienced something in your life or you know someone who has. Like, those stats are staggering. So, yeah, I think it's...
Especially if, like, you don't think you do, you probably do. They just have not told you. Like, yeah. I think that sometimes it's really easy to be like, well, I don't know. And that's never happened to any of my friends. And it's like, there's a, like that whole, the stat about how many are actually reported is astounding.
Yeah. Like a thousand out of every 1,000, like 300 are reported. Yeah. I mean, it's an extremely awful trauma. And so we have to be really sensitive when we talk about it. And also, I think you make a really good point, Abby, just because someone hasn't mentioned to you doesn't mean that they haven't experienced something in their life. And that's theirs to hold and do with what they
exactly
want. So
what I really enjoyed in like rethinking about this episode as much as we have is the way that they at the same time are showing us Joe meeting her mother and finding out that her mother was raped. And then Joe is like the child that was born out of that and her like reaction to that at the same time of how she's like able to then treat a victim. And that's like after she met her mom. So I feel like there's no way that while she was treating that patient, she wasn't also thinking about her mother. Like, I think those things go hand in hand. And I like that they paired them together. I felt like both scenes were incredibly stressful to watch. Like the conversation of Vicky and Joe and the patient Abby, but it was like, it made it like, I don't know. It was like, it almost like gave me a break, like to switch between the scenes.
Yeah.
You know, like, but it doesn't mean that either of them were like easier to listen to. I just think the pairing of that was really smart writing.
Yeah, I agree. I think, Elizabeth Finch wrote this, did a great job because
hey, she's a great writer.
Yeah.
She's
did
a great
a really, writer. Really great job. I'm wondering like, do we want to go back and forth or maybe do we just want to talk about one aspect like Joe and her mom and then move to Abby? Like, what are your thoughts?
Let's do one aspect at a time.
Okay. Joe travels to Pittsburgh and shows up at this beautiful home.
Okay. Why does the home remind me of Lorelai Gilmore's house from The Outside? Is that like, I've only seen Gilmore Girls 1.5 times. Everyone's going to be mad at me, but why did I get that vibe? The front porch?
I don't know. I kind of almost feel like Vicky looks like Lorelai Gilmore. Maybe that's why.
So maybe that just
Lauren
confused
Graham.
Me.
Yeah.
I also got like Parenthood vibes, the front of that house. I don't know, of the grandparents' house. There was something about it that made me think, maybe it's just like a network television house.
That could,
anyways,
yeah,
I'm sorry.
That could very much be.
Side topic.
That it was like one of those houses and they just like re-put it together in a different way. I don't really know how television works, but that seems right.
But the house is what throws Joe off. I feel like she, you know, she sees right away, she hears her moms have children in the house.
Yeah.
She sees that she has a husband and she has this beautiful home.
And a beautiful dog. So she has the perfect life, like two kids, a husband and a dog. And this, like, you can tell that she has means. Like she, and Joe's mom is not, birth mother is like not happy to see her. She doesn't welcome her. She pretty much tells her like, you can't be here. So I imagine that would be really awful and hurtful too, to have this vision of your birth mother, which we'll get into Joe talking about. It's completely different. And then the birth mother to be like, I don't want to, like, what do you want? Money? Like, please get out of here. You know?
Right. Like, I feel like you romanticize that moment in your head. Maybe I, again, am not speaking from my own experience, but like you would just be like, maybe they're going to hug me. Maybe they're going to be so happy to see me. Like maybe they'll recognize something in me, but this reaction is so cold.
Yes. And we find out why, but Joe pretty much asks Vicky, like, there's a diner down the road. Can you please come? And like one conversation and then I'll never come and talk to you again. Like I'll leave you alone. And so we see Joe like stewing at the diner and you kind of think like Vicky's not going to come. And then as she gets up to leave, Vicky walks in the door. Side note, this is not even that important, but this is such a heavy topic. Did you notice that when Vicky sat down, immediately the waitress brought over coffee? And I was like, what kind of diner is this that
maybe again, Gilmore Girls vibes.
Yeah. Like she didn't even like order coffee. I was like, wow, what service, you know?
I also like whenever you're at a public spot having like a deep conversation and like your server comes over and it's like they're doing their job. Like you are at a restaurant, but you're also like, could you go away, please?
Yeah, like we're why are you here? Read the room, Sally. Thanks.
Exactly. So I feel like it's pretty quickly that we learn. Well, it's just so interesting. Like we quickly learned that because she asks about her dad. So we find out Joe's dad died 10 years ago in a motorcycle accident. And it's not until after we even learn that we learn, because I think doesn't she ask, I forget how she gets to that point, but like it takes a lot of opening up and questions for Vicky to even sit down more and to tell her what happened. She wanted to leave.
Right.
Like she didn't even want to tell her that part of the story.
Right.
Do you think that was like trying to protect her or she just didn't want to talk about it? Probably didn't want to talk about it. Or both.
I think a little bit of both because, you know, it's like, it's really tense. And even when Vicky says the story about her father, Joe's birth father, that like he was Vicky's TA. She agreed to go on a date with him. She felt like it was her fault. That's why she didn't tell anyone, but he raped her. She got pregnant. And then I feel like Joe was still having a really hard time, like almost, I don't know how to say this, not like too bad, but just like like my life wasn't better. Like you wanted a better life yes. for me, but it wasn't better. Like I was in and out of foster care. Like you went through this thing, but like then I also went through this horrible thing, you know?
Yeah, which is why I keep wanting to say we talked about, because we did talk about this episode a lot before we're doing this podcast, but like we talked about how it's, again, like good writing in the sense that like you can, both sides have a point and like that's what's hard. That's like when life gets hard is when like Joe's difficulties are valid and so are Vicky's and they compete against each other a little bit. And I thought some like little parts that really got me was like the part when Vicky says that she wanted to stay. She said when you were born, like I wanted to stare at you until that love came. And Joe goes, and it never did. And Vicky goes, no, it did. My heart cracked wide open. It was never just us. No matter how hard I tried, no matter what I did, I resented you so much for it. So like, even like she did love Joe, but it all like at the same time, it was never just her and Joe. There was always this memory of the TA.
Right.
At the same time, which is like ultimately why she talks about her mind being taken from her after the rape. And how like the only way to get her mind back was when she dropped Joe off. Like that was the only way to work towards that. And so,
yeah, she said, you know, she wasn't in her right mind, wasn't in her mind at all. And then she acknowledges, she said, of course you deserved better. I didn't have better to give you.
Yes.
And I think that's kind of when it switches for Joe, like, and, soon after that is the scene where Joe reaches out her hand to Vicky and Vicky pulls it away. And I think what's really hard is, you know, Joe's really struggling in the next couple episodes. After I think just hearing all of this would be extremely difficult. But I do think if there could have been some type of healing between like Vicky and Joe, like if Vicky would have held her hand or, you know what I mean? Like,
it
would be less of a disconnect of like, I still don't want anything to do with you. Like, it's still too painful.
Even though none of this is Joe's fault, I wonder if there's a feeling of like, oh my God, I'm this thing that causes, like hard feelings. Like,
yeah.
Like my father was a rapist.
Yes.
She's feeling this heaviness with it. We also learned that Joe had an abortion when she was 7 weeks pregnant, when she was with her abusive husband. She never told anyone about it, not Alex, not Link, like literally no one, which is interesting because, again, it's like showing choice and like that, like Joe says, I did what I had to do. Like, this was the choice she made in an abusive situation. And so I don't think it's judging what Vicky did. I just think it's interesting and showing that, like, Joe might be able to empathize with Vicky a little bit more than Vicky might think.
Yes, totally. I thought that Joe was, you know, this whole time is Joe's just trying to connect. And I feel like in that moment too, Joe is trying to also just say, like, I understand, you know, yeah. like I understand that, like, I couldn't bring up a child. Like, I knew it wasn't safe for that child. And so I think she was, again, just trying to connect with her. But, you know, at the end of the day, I think even though Vicky has said, like, she's done the work, like, she's gone to therapy, I think she's like, I can't, I will give you this story and explain to you, but I can't connect with you. It's too painful.
And she never does, right? This is like our last.
Yeah, like I don't think we ever like have an interaction with Vicky again. Okay. I think Joe like sticks to her word about like one conversation and then I'll leave you alone.
Well, and also too, this is exciting in a way because it is bringing forward Joe doing the work, which is really great episodes coming up about her tackling all of this, because we have a couple episodes of her not doing well, sort of like feeling the feelings, or I guess numbing the feelings also, before she goes to an inpatient place. So that's all to come. Anything on the two of them before we switch to what's happening at the hospital?
I think the last thing I will say is that, like, I think it's really, I think Vicky ends up saying that her husband doesn't know anything about this. And so kind of going back to what you said in the beginning, Abby, that, like, you know, oftentimes people don't share their extreme traumas with even the closest people in their life.
Oh, wow. Yeah, you're right.
And that's like an example of that, that she had a child and was
raped.
No one in her family knew. Mm-hmm. And she talks about too, how she hid it at college. Like, she blamed it on the freshman 15. Like, she really bared all of that alone by herself. And just how scary and frightening and, that would be as a young college student at any age, but I imagine like as a young college student would be so terrifying. So.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Moving on to in the hospital, I just want to say that I think the two big takeaways and the two really like incredible parts of this part for me are one, the focus on consent. Obviously there was no consent in the rape, but the way that the doctors use consent before moving forward with literally anything, any touching of the body, any test, any, you know, anything, there is, consent is like the main thing. And then the other part too, and then we can dive in here, I guess, is, the way that I think you do not need to see a rape to understand how traumatic it is. I think so often and shows like, I mean, even like Law and Order and stuff, you know, all you see is like a woman on the street in the ground. And then it's like, you don't see this like actual aftermath, I feel like, or like, I mean, Game of Thrones, like television shows that like show the actual rape when I don't think that's necessary. Like, I don't think we need to see that sexual trauma. I think that focusing on the victim and just seeing the aftermath is it hits home. Like, it is enough, and it is focusing on the victim and not the rapist, which I just think this show did a really beautiful job of. And I don't know, I just haven't seen television like that before.
Yeah, I agree. I think in our media and society, we are very comfortable witnessing violence. And violence against bodies. And so there are like Game of Thrones is really tough. Great show. But like, there are some things that we're like, why do we have to see images of that. Right. And that shit sticks with you, you know?
Right. And luckily they got quite a bit of flack for that. And I will just say, if you like moving forward, House of the Dragon is a lot of women are involved in the directing, and it makes a huge difference. Like it is wildly different, in my opinion,
yeah.
in ways, just so if anyone cares. I would also say this quote from Krista Vernoff, this is from a Digital Spy article, says, "I'm tired of awarding shows that use dead, raped female corpses as props for the male cops to go do their job. And if I can't turn on the TV and find it, I'm going to keep making it." So that kind of sums that up for me.
Yeah. And I mean, that is unfortunately Law and Order SVU often. I feel like they do a good job of trying to discuss victims and, you know, but I agree with you that because it is important to tell this story, right? Like, again, going back to those stats, this is rampant. Like, this is a fucking epidemic. We have to figure out ways for this to stop. And so media, TV shows, like, podcasts are like, those are all ways of telling stories, and stories can be ways that we educate people and we learn and we think about things in different ways. Like, that's why art and culture is so incredible. I mean, I was a liberal arts major. I fucking love that shit. And so we have to be able to tell these stories. But I think you're right, Abby. There is a way that we can tell this story that, in a way, to me, like, it gave the power back to Abby in this story at the end of it, like where, like, you were talking about the consent, and we don't need to see her body being violated and the violence that goes along with that to understand the pain that she went through and the trauma. And like, we can watch the second half of the story, you know?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. And I think too, the, consent is obviously, like, it's even the theme we can talk about at the very end, maybe a little bit about Tuck and Ben.
Yes.
That part, but I think too, showing how a rape kit is done. Like, I think you hear that term on a lot of things, like, oh, let's do a rape kit. And it's like, it's done. And like, actually it's incredibly invasive. And I mean, it has to be in order to get all of the things needed. But I just think that showing all aspects of that, like when you had said to me before, when we talked about this, like Teddy holding the speculum, you're just like, oh shit, really? Like we have to do that. And the way that, for me, what I got like emotional about is when it's all done and then Abby falls apart. You know what I mean? Like she held it together. She was like tough for just a little bit longer, like for that to be done. And like, just the like pure effect on her when Teddy said that they were done was just like, ugh. God. It's like, it's bad enough to go through the trauma, but then your body remembers feelings and things, and then have to go through parts of that again and be photographed, and just, it's a lot.
Yeah. It's extremely vulnerable and you're re-traumatized all over again. And so when I watched that scene, I cried very hard. I thought that when they were doing the rape kit, it's just, I could cry again thinking about it. It's so emotional. I think Teddy and Joe did a great job. I think it's interesting too, we didn't really talk about this before the episode, but how Joe really pushes for Abby to do the rape kit. And Abby has that whole monologue about like, what, I'm going to get this rape kit done so there can be, it never come out. There's like a whole backlog of rape kits. Or I can sit in a court of law and they told me that it was my fault. Like, I had too many drinks, you know?
Yeah.
I wore too short a dress. Like, that whole monologue, I think, is so really, sad. It really, really important. Everyone out there needs to know, if like you have been sexually assaulted, you have been raped, you've an attempt at a sexual assault, it is never your fault. There is nothing that you could possibly do to ask for something like that. And if anyone says any different, honest to God, they can go fuck themselves. I'm super passionate about that. So I thought that whole monologue was so important, because so often our culture blames the victim. And then we don't even do anything to put the perpetrator in jail. There on this website, Rain, there is a bunch of information about how many people are actually convicted. It's very low conviction rate. And they also have a whole article on the backlog of rape kits and what they're doing to try and get those processed. So if you want more information on that, they are I mean, they're doing the work. They're trying to get those processed. But I do think it was interesting that like Joe really pushed Abby to do that. And Teddy was kind of on the other end, like she gets whatever she wants. And it is like, what is the balance of that? Because in that moment, you are in so much, you are in like complete whatever mode, freeze, trauma, flight. Like, it's like, you almost do need someone to be like, you should really do this. We don't have to do anything with it. But you also want to give that person consent because they've just lost it all. Like,
right.
I don't know. I just liked how they played both, like Teddy being like, don't push her, and Joe being like, you really got to do this.
Right. I think what helped win her over, not win her over, that is not the right phrase, but to help convince her to do the kit is that idea that like you, who you, like right now in this moment, that might feel like something you don't want to do, but like you don't know how you'll feel in the future. And I want you to have everything that you need if you decide to move forward.
Yeah.
And so I will say like the cynic in me, like, you know, Joe uses, you know, she said, talks about her husband to this victim. The cynic in me is like, if my doctor ever was like, I too was whatever, I'd be like, you're lying. Like you didn't.
Oh, interesting.
Like,
yeah.
You know, like in the new season 19, when that guy's like, my brother died, I'd be like, they've shown doctors lying too often. I don't believe any of you. But obviously that's not the case here. And Joe is being incredibly sincere. I also love Joe never stops holding her hand. Even like going into surgery, Joe doesn't perform the surgery. She stays there holding her hand. And it's very like, Abby has like bonded with her in that sense that like she is a safe space for her.
Yeah. Yeah. I loved that Joe stayed by her. And then at the end, you know, Abby wanted to call her husband, and that's when they finally let go of hands. Like Joe gave her her phone. It was tough too, seeing like Karev at the end of the day. I just admit, like, are we to think that like Joe had this conversation with her mom, and then like a day after that, she has this, like this patient? Like, I do get how Joe, but Joe was very mean to Karev and was like, I do not want to talk about this. I just had an awful day. I think anyone would break at that moment. Like,
yeah.
Sitting in that with someone is so, it's worse for the person that it happened to, but also empathizing and being there with someone, it's extremely difficult and taxing. And with, especially with what Joe had just been through, I imagine she would just want to go crawl in her hole in her bed.
I was talking about this in therapy actually the other day about how like sometimes being isolated in your pain is easier, because if you have to tell someone, then you might have to like hold space for their feelings about it. You know, so like if Joe were to tell Alex about her mom, he might like have some reaction that she then would need to like handle his emotions. And it's like, you're having a hard enough time with your own. Like sometimes it's just like, as much as like obviously being isolated is not great either, it's a whole different kind of like pain. It sometimes could be easier than like the unknown of how someone else will react. Or just like having to live through it all by explaining it again.
Yeah. Yeah. That makes so much sense. And I think it's because, you know, I think we have a really hard time empathizing with people. Like,
yeah.
And you know, there's a difference between like turning it around and like making it about you and your feelings, or also, or like being like, wow, I can't imagine what that would be like. You know, and I just feel like we're all so self-centered and we like ourselves.
I want to read, okay, I'm in a text group with some other really great people, and we were talking about this the other
day. Cool.
We were talking about this the other day because it got brought up again. I love armchair experts. Sometimes Dax can be a little narcissistic or like bring up his own things, but this is a really, I want to read this conversation. This has nothing to do with this. It says, okay. Okay. Like there's this way, Okay, but my friend says, I heard this really fascinating thing on another podcast that apparently the human brain cannot actually fathom experiences it hasn't experienced. It doesn't scientifically have the ability to create new ideas. So everything someone tells you is only able to be perceived by piecing together experience you've felt and seen. So it's technically impossible to understand someone's experience no matter how hard you try. It's impossible to put yourself into their shoes. And then our other friend said, like, I feel like that's why it's such a privilege thing. Like, if you haven't experienced oppression or microaggressions or hardship, it's really hard to wrap your brain around it. And so I think like that is an example of maybe like, I don't know that Karev would have done this, but it's like, even if Joe were to explain this, he can't actually fully comprehend it except through his own experiences. And that's why it's hard when you tell someone something hard and then they tell you something hard in their life. And you're like, no, stop. Like,
yeah.
You know, yeah. So I think it's really natural and empathetic for people to offer like a Me Too anecdote because you're just trying to understand and help them, but it's like definitely a fine line. And I feel like that's why sometimes just being silent in it is like why Joe did that, you know?
Yeah, I think that's really interesting. Just going back to what was being said about like your brain's not able to do that. So mm-hmm. That's actually not empathy. So like Brené Brown has researched empathy and empathy is connecting with people. So we're not alone in our struggle. It actually doesn't require that we've experienced the same situation. Right. So like empathy doesn't require that. And so I don't know if that was what was being said in the text message. Like we actually can't empathize, but like that is not what empathy actually is.
No, it's not having experience. No, I'm saying you can empathize. You just can't imagine it. Like you can't.
Like, oh, right. Well, no one can imagine anything that, like, no one has, even if someone has been through one thing specifically, okay, we're talking about sexual assault in this episode. Even if one person was sexually assaulted and another person came together and they too were sexually assaulted, they are two completely different experiences.
Yes.
So, like,
yes.
No one can ever experience the same thing. And that is why it can be so complicated to even share, with someone who you feel like might kind of get it.
Yeah.
Because, God, life is really hard. And trauma is really, really hard. And I think just showing up, I wish that Joe would like somehow, and I think she does, but find a way. I just don't think she's ready yet to find a way to let Alex in.
Right.
But I understand what you were saying that like, sometimes it is just so much easier just bearing your stuff alone because also too, sometimes people can bring in perspectives that are actually spot on. You're like, I don't want to hear that. Like, I don't want to move forward from this. And so, yeah, I don't know. It's tough. One of the things like I kind of like to do sometimes if someone's coming to me and like, I feel like I've done this with you before. It's like, are we trying to like solve this or like, mm-hmm. are we just like sitting in it, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, and I don't know if I've said that exactly that way, but sometimes that can be so helpful. It's like, I don't want you to tell me anything.
Right.
I just want you to be in this space with me. So.
Yeah. I think that's the best kind of friend you can have is someone that can just do that for you. Cause yeah, I don't want a fix to, there is no fix to a lot of our life problems. So like trying to do it is just frustrating. So that was really a great conversation. I know that went a little off, whatever, but I think it's really important. And I'm excited to see how these two experiences like move Joe forward.
Yes.
Because I think those are some really big episodes. And I think both of these experiences happening are a part of it, not just one and not just the other. And I will say too, the final maybe thing we can talk about on this before I go into the outcome of this episode is just the wall of women. I love this idea that the actress did not want to see it until it was actually being filmed. And I do remember feeling incredibly, like that was an incredibly moving part of the episode. It was inspired by, I guess when there's an organ donor, it's very common for that to happen, for people to line the hallway for the organ donor to move through, which I think is a really beautiful also.
Oh.
So that's what it's inspired from.
I didn't know that, like to get, like to honor that person who's...
Yes, that's what, according to this article.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, I thought it was very, very powerful. And I remember the first time watching it being like very, very moved by it, mm-hmm. you know? I'm not saying it's not as moving the second time, but you know it's coming. So like, yes. It just hits differently. But still very, very like beautiful, powerful scene. And you can just feel like the support, like of all these women, like mm-hmm. going with Abby, which, yeah, super powerful. The last thing before you get into your notes, the consent conversation with Ben Tuck. I just loved it so much. I love that, you know, Tuck is talking to this girl and like Bailey is like, oh shit, like we got to have the conversation about respect. And like, and then they both like say like consent. And we had talked about how Ben takes that conversation off of Bailey's plate. It's like, you know what? I can do it. And I just love how Ben did it. It was like this, like, you know, wrestling this and that. And all of a sudden someone calls time out and everything stops. That's consent. It's like the perfect picture of mm-hmm. consent.
And, also, you know, go ahead.
I was just going to say, and then I know he goes into more detail, but it was just like this one example. And it was like, huh. Yeah, that is consent. It's like stopping when someone says stop.
I love the way that it sort of also mirrored the Vicky storyline in the sense where it's like, even if they're saying yes, 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 and then they change their mind and say no, then you still stop. And that was kind of exactly. like with Vicky. Like she said yes to the date. She said yes to, you know, all these things.
Right.
So I thought it was brilliant. And then I love that also he's just like, and then tell me about her. You know, like there's not a punishment in liking someone. Like that is okay, you know?
Well, and that's the thing too, is I love, there's not a punishment even in like the idea of Tuck at some point having sex. Like,
right.
It's the sex talk that like, this is good. Like you want to pay attention to what she wants and like listen to her and it should be fun. And, but like, also listen and respect and then like, yeah, what's she like? Like, yep. I feel like so often we like tell our children that sex is bad and it's for adults and don't, you know, mm-hmm. like we just ingrain these really difficult things to unravel when we're adults, you know? Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. so just to have an open conversation about like, in a way that you can understand, like here's an example of what consent would be. And then like, what do you like about her? Because I also think that like, that's not going to be the last time Ben has a conversation with Tuck about it. Like,
right, right.
I think they're going to continue the conversation. I just liked how they portrayed that. So
it was a perfect cherry on top of the episode, I feel like.
Yeah.
And so, okay, this is kind of cool. So this is all from a Digital Spy article that came out after the episode, a little bit after the episode aired. It says, not only was the series widely praised for its informed and sensitive handling of an experience, which is unfortunately incredibly common, the real world effects of that particular episode have been colossal, spurred on by an appeal from Ellen Pompeo. At the end, she encouraged viewers to reach out if they had been affected by sexual violence with the contact details for the National Sexual Assault Hotline operated by the Rape, Abuse, and Incest National Network shared on screen. A study carried out by researchers at Oklahoma State University Center for Health Sciences monitored certain keywords on both Google and Twitter for 2 weeks before and after the episode was broadcast, as well as asking Rain to share its call volumes in the 48 hours after it aired. It says that Trevor Torgerson, a medical student, told Reuters Health that engagements with the Rain Twitter account and tweets mentioning sexual assault hotline increased by 1,097% the day after the episode. Other data includes tweets that mentioned Rain were 292% higher than usual, and the number of searches for that term were 41% larger than predicted. Search volumes for sexual assault and rape were 9% and 8% higher, respectively. And in the 48 hours after the episode aired, the number of calls to the National Sexual Assault Hotline increased by 43%.
Wow.
So, like, there was an actual real life, you know, like, benefit of this episode and difference. Yeah. So, I think we always say representation matters. And I think considering it in like a certain experience and showing that matters. And I just think it was like a real win for Grey's, a real 10 out of 10.
A real 10 out of 10. So we were talking about like, well, what do we rate this episode? And Abby and I were like, well, 0 out of 10 for rape. Like it seems right. really, complicated to rate this episode really high because of mm-hmm. the content of the episode, but like the way that they portrayed it, the way that they did it, 10 out of 10, but also really difficult topic. And so, yeah. Who would we give? I mean, Catherine Fox wore Joe?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, Joe was there. I mean, all of the, I feel all like of all of everyone. Abby's staff, like Teddy, Kadri, DeLuca for making Richard not come in, Richard for staying out in the hall, everyone, you know?
Abby. I give DeLuca an 8 out of 10. He should have at least told Richard why Richard couldn't go in the hall.
Yeah, that's true. That's very true. So all in all, I feel weird saying great episode, but very difficult episode.
Powerful episode. Powerful episode.
And again, I'm just going to read this number. So RAIN, the Rape, Abuse, and Incest National Network, 800-656-HOPE. That's 4673. Or there's a live chat. They have resources on that website. If you need them, please head there. Otherwise, thank you for listening to a difficult episode today.
We'll be back next week with dinner parties and Owen yelling in hallways. So, So stay tuned and thanks for listening. And please don't forget, if you felt that this was important, to rate or review us. And we are just really grateful for all of you. And we'll see you next week. But time of death is 10:25.
Beep.